That's Alison Krauss along with Gillian Welch, and I'll Fly Away. Kind of an old standard. Keith and Kristen Getty before that with their song Simple Living, and they had a lot to tell us there. 9.5 minutes after the hour on this Tuesday morning here along the Broken Road, and we're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don is a biochemist and a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and joined us just virtually every Tuesday, and we talk about science and faith and creation and such things. And Don, good morning. How's life in the... Well, you're back after a long journey now, back to Garden Valley, Texas, and I imagine you were greeted with open arms down there.
Oh, yes, folks were glad to see me, and I was glad to see them. I didn't get back until about 6:30 yesterday evening from a long trip up to your part of the country.
Yeah, Minnesota, just south of East Dakota here. There was a Creation Moments board meeting, and it was an eventful board meeting, and I think the board went a long way toward paving the future for this ministry, which is already 52 years old now for Creation Moments.
52 years old. Yes, we had our 50th anniversary a couple of years ago.
And some good things happening there now, and some new directions, and you got to be pretty excited about what's in store for them, huh?
Well, it looks like, we're going to expand the ministry a bit, and it's a bit premature to, you know, discuss exact details, but mm-hmm. It always amazes me how the Lord just brings things together at the right time.
Well, it appears to have happened here, that's
right,
for sure.
When we need it.
Yeah. There's an article in USA Today. It was actually published about 5 days ago by Sherry Carlson. And so this is not a scientific journal. It's a, you know, well, everybody knows what USA Today is. But it's the story is about a mammoth find, another mammoth discovery in California. And Don, I was never aware that this is the California. This is along the Southern California coastline around the Ventura area there, the Channel Islands National Park, was such a gold mine for paleontologists. Did you know that? Were you aware of this?
Oh, well, you know, Los Angeles has the
La Brea tar pits. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not really tar, it's actually oil, thick oil, mm-hmm. but which apparently these islands kind of the bay, if you will, or the sound, or the area between the islands and the coastline actually produces tar, or produces this oily mess that gets caught up in some of the seaweed there. And folks, use that to not only for fuel, but to coat into waterproof things like little boats going back and forth between the islands and the mainland. So there have been quite a bit of paleontology, going on. Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of the number of mammoths apparently they've found along the California coast, but these islands apparently have had mammoths as well. Mm-hmm. And the main article is basically a suggestion that, wow, we found a big mammoth, and we thought the only mammoths that were on this island are these islands. Actually, it's a whole series of islands in the Channel Islands, in the archipelago of the just right off the coast, not right off, I mean 40 miles.
A little northwest of Los Angeles there, yeah.
Right, and so there's these islands actually have some interesting history as well. But the first question you have to ask yourself, how does whether they're large or small mammoths, how do these animals get there in the first place? So and then what you know, what is the timing? Excuse me. Mm-hmm. What is the timing of all of this? Because obviously I think it's obvious that a mammoth isn't going to swim 40 miles.
Yeah, or fly, fly probably. Yeah. How do you suppose they got there, and where did they come from? Now, mammoths are found in many different locations. We've talked before about Siberian mammoths, and there is, of course, a Mammoth Lake, which is in Northern California, and I'm presuming, I don't know the history of that place, but I suspect they found mammoth remains there, fossils or skeletons. So they must have walked across the bridge from Siberia, the land bridge.
Yes, absolutely. So, the creation creationists would basically say that not only man but animals migrated across the Bering Strait and across that land bridge. You know, when it was a land bridge. And so you had mammoths, you had all kinds of different types of animals. And of course we're familiar with the mammoths that were, you know, found up in Alaska in the north, very north part of Americas, for example. But they also migrated south. And apparently they migrated south into down into California. So as the animals were moving, the people were moving as well. And so we have the native Indians that the Eskimos, for example, that populated Alaska, and the native Indians that came down around into the southern parts of America and into California. Well,
these animals would have lived contemporaneously with man, right? Because I understand that the Native Americans hunted them for food.
Well, they did, and this is part of the problem with this article, is that they suggest that these animals were there long before man got there. We know that certainly can't be the case, because when the Ark landed, finally landed, and then the door was opened about a year later, peoples and animals migrated from there, because obviously the world was covered with water. And then after the flood, and we've talked about this before, there was the ice age that took place, and the ice age couldn't have taken place without the warm oceans that were before the flood. And it was the warm oceans that actually pumped moisture into the atmosphere. And then as the land was being cooled because of all the volcanic activity that happened at the time of the flood and post-flood to cause a blockage of the sunlight, then the earth, the land was cooler than the oceans, and so that caused snow, water to precipitate as snow and accumulate, and we had the great ice age. Well, at the close of the ice age, animals now, are migrating and people are migrating, then of course, people didn't start migrating. If you take Genesis, for example, as a recorded history, as it was meant to be taken, people didn't start to migrate until after the Tower of Babel, when God confused the languages, and then people couldn't work together to build a tower up to the heavens. So there was a period of time in which probably animals were migrating before the people, but we're not talking about, hundreds of thousands of years here. We're, maybe talking about, 500 years or less.
No, of course, in the article, it says the scientists are making the statement that Colombian mammoths, and I'm not sure how the name Colombian got attached, whether that's from an area or an age maybe, when they figured these mammoths lived, said the Colombian mammoths, which stood up to 13 feet tall, weighed 20,000 pounds, made it to the Channel Islands about 150,000 years ago. And then they have speculated that there, with less food, less space, and no predators, I don't know how they know that, the giants shrunk to their much smaller descendant, the pygmy mammoth, which they have found in I guess, some greater numbers around the Channel Islands National Park area there and in parts of California. So, and I didn't mean to interrupt your narrative there, but the Colombian mammoths, 13 feet tall, shrinking smaller because they had less food, less space, and no predators, presumably. Does that make sense to you, or is this something just in fact, not evolution, but if it happened like that, it would have been what we would call, as creationists, a variation in kind?
Well, of course, it's a variation in kind, and whether or not it's, you've got to be aware that when you have a different species, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a different kind of animal. And, you know, species and genus and everything, it's just a way of, it's a nomenclature. It's a way of classifying animals. And so a different species, for example, could very much, as it probably is in this case, could be the same kind of animal. And whatever the pressure was to cause these animals to be smaller, perhaps it was dietary, as they suggest, putting pressure on the population, then the smaller ones would be more likely, you know, to survive, is what their conclusion would be. And that, you know, may be an acceptable explanation for that, but as the Bering Strait was a landmass at one point that connected, you know, the two continents, so these islands must have been connected by a land bridge as well. And the point being that at the time of the glacier period, of course, a lot of water was on land as frozen ice and snow. And it wasn't until after that started melting that both the Bering Strait, that landmass closed, and there was water between the two continents, and the water between the these islands then would have appeared as the water level in the oceans would have increased. So you could have gotten both. Obviously, you got animals migrating to this part of the coastline, which would have at that point would have been part of the California coastline, and even possibly man at the time, because they were following the food source. And then, a group of peoples got caught, if you will, in the aftermath of the flood over there. And actually, I find it interesting. I would have liked to have seen a better detail of the picture, and a little step back. It says that they found these bones actually in the cliff. And it was the fact that the tusk was sticking out a little bit that one of the paleontologists who was surveying the area marked it with his geopositioning instruments and later came back to explore the area. And they thought they were going to pull up a small tusk, but indeed it started to be a pretty big tusk. But it looks like the dirt that's around it is very much what you would find, for example, from a dust storm that took place after the flood, after the initial ice age, and then when things started to cool down, the air was dry and a lot of dust was kicked up. And that's why we find mammoths, for example, up in the northern part of Americas and in Siberia, standing up with food in their stomach, because a catastrophe of this tremendous dust storm, took place at that time. And so they were covered in dust.
It suggests, of course, that they died quickly.
Yes, they would have died quickly. Now, I don't know how much of this mammoth they're going to ultimately uncover, because they're just getting down now to the skull. Is it going to be a whole animal or just, a head with a tusk sticking out? But it would be interesting if they could actually indeed find more of the animal right there, as opposed to being spread out over a large area. Of course, if it's all in one place, it would have meant that animal probably died from a quick catastrophe, like a dust storm, for example, as opposed to if the bones are spread out, then you would you would think that, maybe there was a flood or a mini flood, waters rushing in quickly that might have distributed the bones and killed the animal.
Now, it's interesting that this article expresses the hope of the scientist that this mammoth find, which is lies in between the larger Colombian mammoth and the smaller pygmy mammoths, it lies in between them in size. They're saying that, it means one of, I'll just read the quote. "It's definitely a lot smaller than our Colombian mammoths in South Dakota, but it's definitely a lot bigger than any pygmy mammoths I've seen," said one of the paleontologists. Wilkins is his name, of the nearly pristine skull and tusks. "That means one of two things." He's already drawing conclusions here. "This could be a transitional animal. That's the hope. That's the golden spike we're looking for. Those are hard to find, though," he said, and then one wonders why. And then he said the other possibility, the skull could belong to a young Colombian mammoth. Maybe a bit less dramatic, but still a great find. Their hope is to demonstrate the evolution of the mammoth from the large Colombian mammoth size down to the pygmy size by finding an intermediary. And wouldn't it be easy simply to conclude that? I can't imagine the DNA evidence, though. Can you at this point with those critters?
Well, that's an interesting comment in and of itself. Now, why couldn't you imagine that, for example, the tusk or the skull might contain some DNA? Because we already know that DNA has been found in dinosaurs, dinosaur mm-hmm. remains, for example, pointing to that the dinosaur is much, much younger than the presupposed age of the dinosaurs. So in this case, one might be able to do a DNA study if you look for it. So, you know, if you're thinking that these animals are 18,000 years old and, oh, DNA couldn't possibly, you know, survive that long, much less millions of years, like the dinosaurs, then you're not going to look for it. But if you think that, these animals probably died after the time of the flood, maybe they're, 4,000 years old, maybe, 3,500 years old. We don't know exactly. Now, they did do some dating of this particular species, and I think the number was like
13,000, I think. They're saying all the mammoths found in that area date to about 13,000 years ago is what the article says. That's according to the researchers at the U.S. Geological Survey. Now that's not because they dated the skeletons or I think these are bones and skeletons, not fossils, but it's because they dated charcoal samples near the skull to that date, so they figure the animals are the that seems like a large leap of logic to me.
Right, because when did the charcoal? When was the charcoal formed? Yeah. And all this other stuff. There could be some errors in the dating there. Anyway, it would be interesting to actually look for DNA samples and look for cells. Blood vessels, for example, which which could possibly be there. Do some DNA dating, and then do some DNA dating of the Columbia mammoth and these pygmy mammoths and say, hey, the DNA looks quite similar between the two. Mm-hmm. And actually maybe of the same origin.
It seems to me that would be the only way to resolve this, because given a number of Colombian mammoths, the much larger species being found in the area, and the pygmy mammoths known to have inhabited the area, and then finding one animal in between in size and extrapolating from that this was a transitory or transition species borders on silly to me. It was a young one, or it was an aberration, a small one. Unless they can find many more of them, how would you ever establish that this was a transitional animal?
Well, it'd be very, very difficult to say that it was a transitional animal. And what is a transitional animal anyway? Mm-hmm. I mean, the reason why they haven't found any, of course, they've named a couple, but the reason why they haven't found many is because that there isn't going to be any transitional animals. There could be variation of a kind, you know, that we've talked about, but it goes back to the nomenclature. It goes back to the naming system. And if you say that, you know, this is a different species than that species, it's not like going from, you know, monkeys to man, for example. And they've obviously been looking for that for a long, long time and have named several transitional humanoids, which either turned out to be a monkey or a you know, some other ape species,
or a composite of different creatures gathered from a large area, like Lucy, for example.
Well, exactly. Yeah, so we'll take a bone here, we take a bone there, and we put it together, and we call it a monkey man. It's going to be, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with this particular type of research. But I guess the point of this whole discussion is that if your assumptions are flawed and you ignore history, if you ignore, in this case, written history, and ignore the fact that there was a global flood, ignore the fact that, hey, there is a creator and he created animals and man and fish and, you know, vegetation after their own kind, which it says in Genesis repeatedly, then you're going to come to the wrong conclusions about these things. And this happens over and over and over again, especially in paleontology, that the wrong conclusions are drawn because the underlying assumptions are incorrect. The underlying assumptions for many, many paleontologists, if not most of them, is that things evolved, and so we are looking for transitional forms instead of saying, this is just a different kind of animal. And, you know, who's to say that the pygmy mammoth, for example, isn't a different kind of mammoth as opposed to a one that formed from the original mammoths and then became small because of the food source being limited. Well, you know what? The food source was limited up in the north, too, mm-hmm. when these dust storms started happening and after the flood and after the ice age. The food source was very, very limited. And so, you know, why weren't the mammoths that were found there, why didn't they find some smaller, you know, pygmy mammoths up there? Well, they didn't, and they haven't. And there's all kinds of mammoths up in Siberia. They're still finding fields and fields of mammoths. So the herds had to be tremendous in size. And obviously, we're seeing some of them that have migrated south here in the California coast that wound up on these islands.
And granted, research on this particular animal remains, the skull and tusks, and perhaps more body lying behind it in the dirt. It's a preliminary stage. I mean, this is only, a week old, this discovery, so lots to be determined yet. But what impresses me first about this article in USA Today, and once again, it's a consumer kind of publication. It's not meant to be scientific, but even in scientific publications, you see the same thing, fuzzy language. The maybes and the what ifs and the guesses and the hopes being expressed that tend to leave the reader with the impression that this is a done deal. In other words, you read this article now and you figure, aha, they found another link in the evolutionary chain. That's not what it says.
Well, no, and if you do a cursory reading of it, that's the kind of conclusion that you would draw because of that one statement. But if you even read in that further in the paragraph, they say, well, you know, maybe not. But the impression that it seems like they want to leave with you is that, yes, indeed, we found another transitional form.
Even by expressing the hope that this animal is a link between two different species and calling it evolution betrays the purpose of the research. You know, why not just...
Well, I think...
Go ahead.
Yeah, and the conclusion, even though they didn't use the term evolution, but it certainly implied by the article that obviously evolution is a fact, and we don't even need to talk about it anymore.
Okay, interesting. And we've talked before about the dust storms and the climate that that took out these mammoths apparently in very short order. Talk about that a little bit more. We've described some of the mammoths found in Alaska and in Siberia. Wouldn't it be normal for them to try to head south to escape cold weather if they'd had the opportunity?
Well, of course, and that's you know, you have a lot of animals, for example, that headed south, and the Siberian tiger, for example, that obviously is found in the Brea tar pits, as well as other different types of animals, the sloth and various other animals that got trapped there. And so if you have the concept that all animals and all humans migrated from the Middle East and actually migrated from Babylon, then and from Mount Ararat, or the mountains of Ararat, then everything that you see on this continent as, in quote, native animals, and everything that you see to the north of us, as well as to the south of us, because those animals had to migrate as well, came from the Middle East region. And so not only animals were migrating, but ultimately people were migrating and following these animals. And it's interesting because it gives you at least a concept that these animals had to multiply quite rapidly after the flood. I mean, because we find evidence. I mean, the mammoths are the ones that are talked about the most, but there were grazing animals that were kind of living in the same area, which tells us that, there was a grassland. And the reason why a lot of the mammoths and a lot of these grazing animals were found in the area that they were found in was because since in the early stages of the ice age, the oceans were warm, these areas that they were found in were areas of the ocean breezes keeping the land warm, and vegetation was still growing. And so that's where the animals were. Mm-hmm. And so earlier on, some of them probably migrated south. And as it got colder and colder, they were kind of trapped there because everything else around them was absolutely frozen. And then at the end of the Ice Age period, as the waters were cooling down, then we had these tremendous dust storms because the grasslands were now drying up because it was not enough moisture and to keep them green. And eventually, we had massive dust storms, so massive, in fact, that these mammoths that they found standing up. The dust storm was at least 130 feet deep. That's a lot of dust in one, in one afternoon to be deposited that quickly. A great catastrophe, the greatest catastrophe on Earth, obviously the global flood, but subsequent micro catastrophes, for example, as the dust storm, and then later as the ice started melting, we had floods that, as the water was draining and as the oceans of the deep were getting deeper, described in the Bible, for example, described in Genesis, and the water was rushing off of the earth at that time, we had major canyons being formed. And of course, the most famous one on the Americas is the Grand Canyon. And the Grand Canyon wasn't formed by the Colorado River. It was formed by the subsequent floods, if you will, from the water rushing off the earth.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about animals repopulating, that there would have been a small number of animals after the flood that quickly repopulated and spread as the continents themselves drifted apart, and that explains a lot of the common finds of animals between, say, South America and Africa. That people have concluded must have evolved one from the other, but may well have been the same species before the continents split apart. But I think of the example I recently heard after Mount St. Helens, and not only the vegetation but the wildlife coming back up there, where elks, who normally give birth to one calf a year, giving two. Now the whole pattern is changing in order to repopulate a sparsely populated area and to reestablish the herds.
Well, that's correct. You know, that's an interesting interesting find in and of itself. You know, what happens to the biology? What happens to the climate? Obviously, there's an effort to, as you say, repopulate the area, and even having certain vegetation coming into the area, because after Mount St. Helens, I mean, the volcanic dust was not conducive for growing life. And the scientists were saying, this is going to take thousands and thousands of years to repopulate with vegetation, much less animals. And here we have, after not so long a period of time, certain types of plants going in that have the nitrogen source that the other plants need. And from that, then you have the animals returning because the plants have returned. It didn't take thousands and thousands of years. It happens in tens of years, tens of years instead of, thousands of years.
We're about 35 years since the major eruption back then, and already a huge leap forward in vegetation and trees and wildlife have occurred in that area. Interesting stuff. And the story of the mammoths, it's in an article on USA Today. Again, if you'd like to read the article, it's a very brief article. And again, it's a consumer kind of article, not real scientific. But you find it interesting at USA Today. There's a link on the Broken Road site in the chat box, chat window right now. You click on that and read the article for yourself. I'd also like to recommend you visit Creation Moments, the Creation Moments website. That's creationmoments.com. And Creation Moments is a ministry that's, as Don mentioned, has been around for about 52 years now. And the mission really is to present the science that supports biblical creation. And it's valid science, and it rarely gets a real hearing. And, it's immediately criticized simply because it does not adopt the evolutionary model. It adopts the Genesis model. The Genesis not as science, but as a valid history of the beginning of the earth and the creation of the universe. I think you find it an interesting thing, and your church could use some of their materials, some of the DVDs and the books, and of course we enjoy the program twice daily here on Broken Road Radio Creation Moments. So we're really glad for this ministry, and Don, we're really glad for you. Thank you for joining us on this Tuesday, and we'll let you take a break.
Quite welcome, and yes, it's always fun to get together.
All right, well, have a good week. Rest up from your trip, and we'll talk to you next week, okay?
Okay, very good.
Bye-bye.